It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, hey, closet dwellers and closet busters. It's time once again for the Coming Out Lounge. I'm Rick Clemens, the Coming Out Coach, and we are here today to explore, well, a lot of different things. We're going to explore everything from politics to adult films to being yourself and actually going places that you may not have gone before. Because you know what I found out is so many times assumptions is what makes an ass out of you and me. Or, well, that's what they say. But in this case, today's guest, this is what's happened more often than not, just because of what he does for a living. He often gets labeled as this guy, and as an adult film star and producer, he gets dropped in that category of, well, however someone perceives what an adult film star does. But what I know about this guy is he's so much more than what you see on the camera. While his life work is considered, well, X-rated, so to speak, his life's passions are always around LGBTQ activism. He loves to write, and he's a family guy. In fact, you're going to be kind of surprised that one of the things he tends to do on a daily basis is tries to see someone very, very important in his own life, and we'll get to that during the interview. So today we're going inside the heart and soul of this beautiful man. So I want you to drop your assumptions about anything you think about adult film stars. Look into who this person is. Join us as we take you inside the industry to the heart of a guy who really loves celebrating everything he's done in his life, including being 20 years in the adult film industry. Welcome to the show, Michael Lewis. Thank you, Michael, so much for being here today, man.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you very much. That was a very nice introduction.
Well, thank you. You bet, man. You bet. Let's kind of just dive right in. You've been in this business, 20 years. That's what I was told. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on the show is to help you kind of celebrate that.
22, but I have my company for 20 years.
That's awesome,
I have my company,
man,
for 20 years.
Very cool.
As a model, I'm longer.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, 20 years of doing this work, it's definitely changed, has it not?
Oh, yeah, of course. Back in the days when, unfortunately, I didn't start with an investment, but back then it was very easy to make money because it was very simple way of getting to consumer. That would be either VHS tape and then change to DVD tape, but whatever it was, it's a physical format. Yep. You give it to distributor, and then distributor delivers into the stores and, mail order. So that was very, very simple. And then with the internet, there are so many other ways how to get this product to customers. And in fact, the physical product, of course, the DVDs are dying. So just like VHS, died before. So it's much, much more challenging. And of course, now it is all about the piracy. It's about also tubes that are legal. And it's about, anything from amateur porn to video cams to, you name it. There are so, you can get porn so easily today and so many different venues for getting porn, because camming is also, form of porn. It's easy and, it's easy to find, that kind of materials.
Right. But I think the thing that sets you apart, Michael, is especially in your production company, is you bring a lot of class and elegance to the way you do this. And, I've seen a few of your films. And I'm like, there's always a difference. I mean, yes, anybody can get what they want on the net these days. It's true. You can do your own stuff. You can go to some of the amateur stuff, but someone who's really looking for the story and looking for more than let's just fuck, I think you bring an element of artistic style to that. So how did you design and come about being that kind of guy where it was more, let's go for the artistic flair, let's go for the design eye? What was the thing that led you into that kind of element?
I don't think that this is something about, you can call it artistic, that's great, and it's very nice to hear. I think this is actually about attention to details and, having a really high quality of work. I work with, I'm a businessman and a producer.
Right.
And as a producer, I think I have a gift of bringing together really talented people. I think I have an eye for really good talent. Then I let them create. And also, it's all about details for me. And I have, you know, we always go for the most beautiful locations. Mm-hmm. We always have, you know, best photographers in the industry. And I think we have the hottest models. And mm-hmm. we travel the world, which is something that, you know, production companies today are not really doing. They're, you know, filming is happening usually in apartments or hotels. And mm-hmm. we are still traveling. So that's, I think, it's just about, you know, trying to make it, you know, you can say perfect, but there is nothing perfect, but we're trying to get there to make it as good as possible. But, you know, of course, number one thing that I'm looking for is, you know, is actually hot sex. Mm-hmm. You know, the formula is our models look like models, but, you know, they get quite dirty when it comes to sex.
Right, right.
It's sort of no strings attached.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk a little bit about the models. Even that has changed throughout the years. I mean, we've gone from, you know, all the years of the AIDS epidemic scares to now we play a little safer. Hopefully, most people are doing that. Now we're in the prep world, and I know you're very much an advocate of prep. So how has that begun to impact and make what you do easier or harder? Either way, I know there's probably good and bad for both.
Well, you know, I used to advocate for condoms when there was no alternative for years and years, and I didn't switch to condomless sex for a very long time and could make much more money that, you know, I believe before PrEP came to the market, and even several years after, we did not. And then I went on PrEP myself about 5 years ago, basically in the beginning, and I actually stopped using condoms. Now, of course, there are, you know, STDs, and there is a risk always, but, you know, this is everybody's choice. And I think that, you know, everybody takes certain risks, but I, you know, for me, I always had this a fear of getting HIV because I lived through the times then people were dying. Actually, people were dying. I'm 45 years old, and, you know, I do remember this time very well.
Yep.
So I think that back in the days, can you imagine how many lives could be saved if PrEP would be around? And, you know, what today is, you know, today we have a choice. We have other, it's not only condom that can protect you. There are other ways to protect your PrEP, of course. And then also we do know today, we have a fantastic knowledge. HIV positive people that are undetectable, which is most cases because, you know, people do take in America, it is, you do take pills right away as soon as you are diagnosed. And that's one of the reasons so you become undetectable. And the detectable person cannot pass it to a negative, HIV negative person. He cannot pass the virus because it is so suppressed. So that is yet another way of protecting yourself.
Absolutely.
So, you know, by having sex with someone who knows his status and, you know, that he's positive and being undetectable because he's taking his medication. So I think that's a great thing that we now arrived to this time where we have the choice, And with PrEP as well, look, you know, if you have HIV, you have no choice but to take a medication, which thankfully is getting easier and easier. But I mean, you know, it used to be very damaging, very difficult, you know, 10, 15 years ago. It's still hard on you, but, you know, much better than it used to be. And then, you know, PrEP, you can always stop taking. And that's a great thing. Again, this is a choice you have. You can take PrEP, and when you're not sexually active, you can stop taking it. So I think that's a great thing. So that changed, and the porn industry changing because of that. Most of the models are very aware of PrEP. I remember that when I would, you know, just 2 years ago when I would be talking to models, most of them didn't know what PrEP is about. Mm-hmm. And I did send so many models to clinics, and I'm very happy that I'm very proud that so many people that I know are on PrEP because advised them. And so, and I usually push for that pretty hard because I do remember a friend of mine actually who didn't want to go on PrEP. When he finally went, he was positive. And I felt back then that I didn't do enough to, and he was my good friend, and he's my good friend. And I felt like I didn't do enough. I should have talked to him more. And so, you know, that's something what make people more comfortable. I think it's fantastic that people are not feared of having sex. It's very important. With me, PrEP, what it did, it took away the fear. And when you leave through 80s and 90s, beginning of 90s, when it's a death sentence, then it's very important that, you know, you have this fear elevated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're no longer worried to be tested. Right. I was horrified to go get tested. And I went on post-exposure prophylaxis, I think 10 times, because, you know, whenever I will think I did something wrong. So that's another thing. It's so important that people don't have fear. People can enjoy sex without, you know, being scared. And, you know, that's, I think that's a very important thing. And of course, people that have, that live with HIV, you know, PrEP is, and HIV, while it's not a death sentence any longer, of course not, it comes with a huge stigma.
Yes.
So both PrEP is, of course, helping to eliminate the stigma. And that knowledge which we have that undetectable people cannot pass the virus to, that is also important knowledge. So those PrEP and that knowledge are incredibly important in fighting that stigma and that comes with HIV.
Yeah.
Because people are afraid of HIV infection. I mean, I had a boyfriend who was HIV positive. I remember asking, well, you know, how many people that are negative when you go on the date, how many people will tell you that will not go with you?
Mm-hmm.
Out of 10 negative people, he said, maybe two. And others will leave the state right away. We just will never call back. And that's incredibly sad. It's incredibly sad. I think it's changing now.
But don't you think this is very indicative of where we are right now, even as a society? As I'm listening to you tell that story and come through, you know, how you came on to PrEP and how you feel towards it. The overriding theme I heard of that is it's about people not wanting to be educated. It's about people not wanting to listen. It's about people not wanting to take in and hear the other side. And given where we are in our political climate and everything here in the States, it just seems, and not just in the States, all over the world, but especially in the States here, it just seems like we're so bombarded with this. If we just would listen to each other, if we would just hear the other side of the story, how much more impact would we have? Whether it be being on PrEP and HIV or our different political views and things. I just feel like this is, you know, what you're bringing up is really the epitome of where we are as a society right now.
Well, I think, thankfully, the debate about PrEP, as far as I'm concerned, is basically over. I mean, look, I still find, you know, meatheads that would tell me, oh, well, you know, it's conspiracy. It's not really 100% and all that, you know, garbage people that can read statistics, right? Statistics, right? Or talk from different ridiculous points that, you know, what if you forget to take medication? I mean, you know, it's like stupid things like, well, what if you forget to put the condom on? You know, so, I mean, yes, I mean, it's much more, of course, we don't listen to each other mostly, of course, when it comes to, you know, political climate,
right?
Particularly right now, you know, so, oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm curious about the adult film industry right now, because, and this is going to be kind of a weird twist on a question, but to me, it almost feels like if we don't allow this industry to continue to do what they do, which I'm an advocate, I'm like, it's an entertainment thing. You know, people go to movies all the time that are bloody and gory and all these other things. I just find it so ironic that, you know, and we know where this all comes from. It's always around religion and stuff like this. But if we were to take this industry away and say, you can't do this, we're suddenly back in those times of what else can somebody take away then? You know,
I don't think we're anywhere even remotely.
No, I don't
close
either.
To that.
No,
but,
I'm just thinking that it's so interesting that we're still tied up in this sexual conversation these days in different ways, you know?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, look, there are a lot of people that, you know, that are prudes and there are, and yes, it has to do with religion. And, you know, I mean, there can be prudes that have problem with sexuality, not just the form, but with sex, not because they're religious. They can have other reasons, you know. Did you notice sometimes people that cannot get laid as often as, you know, others, you know, hate those that can get laid and, you know, you know, there are so many different reasons. But in terms of porn today, you know, I mean, this is not a question. Look, they're trying to shut down porn industry for so many years, since, I don't know, like 70s, since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just something that is impossible, particularly now. I mean, our society is, it's like a pornalization of the society. Look how I mean, how people dressed, you know, look at our, you know, celebrities, they're dressed like hookers. Look how many different outlets we have, you know, that have to do with porn. I mean, you know, cams and, you know, and of course, you know, porn. And in the hotels you have, you know, the channels, porn show. I mean, it's just impossible to shut that. And, you know, there are all those tubes. What are you going to do? You know, this is not some Muslim country where you can do that. I mean, look, they tried to do it, you know, with going back to Larry Flint. Mm-hmm. It just didn't work. Back then, when society was much more conservative, it's just impossible.
So
I'm not worried about that.
So I'm curious, would you classify our society, and I know this is a big question, but where would you say we are on that overall conservative realm? Because I, you know, for me personally, I say we're not really a conservative society. We have pockets of it. I think we're kind of on maybe a liberal conservative. We're not completely liberal either. We're kind of somewhere between, not completely halfway between liberal and conservative, but I think we're, you know, leaning towards a more liberal, open-minded society in general. Where would you say?
For sure. Yeah. Well, absolutely. I mean, depends how you measure the, you know, the liberalism, right? And open-mindedness. But if you look at something what was such taboo, for example, you know, I mean, gay rights, I mean, gay marriage. Majority of Americans are now, they have no problem with gay marriage.
Right.
And if you measure it this way, then yeah, society is leaning towards being more and more liberal. Absolutely. And of course, you know, today we have, there's a huge problem with, you know, Donald Trump becoming a president. But I believe this is, well, first of all, I believe he will be either impeached or resigned by the end of the year. I really believe so. And, you know, this will not happen again. I think that was a circumstance that just happened, you know, can happen once.
Well,
and
it's a wake-up
call. I don't think it will happen again.
Right. Well, I think it was a wake-up call for all of us to go, okay, let's think about what's going on around all of us. I mean, all of us having more voice.
I think there are many wake-up calls. I mean, first of all, you know, obviously people don't trust politicians. Well,
right.
Second of all, you cannot have, political elite like, you know, Hillary Clinton, who I love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm next to Trump. I just love Hillary Clinton. But you cannot have, you know, politician like that is so hated by majority of population, mistrusted.
Right.
You know, you cannot, you know, have this, you know, such politician run. And, you know, she obviously did run. And because, you know, because Clintons are very influential and are, you know, politicians fear them. But look what happened. And of course, in general, you know, our politicians were very dismissive of working class. You know, I mean, calling working class and deplorables is the wrong thing to do. It's an arrogance. You cannot talk like this to your voters. I mean, that's another thing. And, you know, exactly what happened. I mean, look, when you talk to people like, well, you know, uneducated voting for Trump and all of that, you know, stupid people, low IQ people, those that didn't go to college. Well, you know what? Those people that are not going to college, that are uneducated, they will be voting for Trump just because they are frustrated and angry. You just can't do it. There are many, many mistakes. It's like an hour of conversation, and I know
Absolutely.
We have time that is very precious, but yeah, there are many mistakes, and it's not one thing, it's many things. And of course, the evil country which I came from. And so believe me, I know that it is a very evil country, of course, you know, played a role in installing that, you know, sick person and making a joke out of American presidency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, obviously, you know, there was a foreign power, the hostile foreign power, Russia, had its finger in it. So it's just a lot of things which all came together, from bad candidate to a foreign power to, you know, I mean, mistrust with politicians, it's a lot. And I don't think it will happen again.
Yeah, I agree. So I'm curious, let's kind of switch gears here. What are you most passionate about these days? What's the thing that's really exciting you and lighting you up in your
Politics.
Life? Politics.
Politics.
That's kind of what I gathered.
Did you notice?
Yeah, I kind of noticed. Yeah, definitely. No, I get that. And I love that you have this voice. I know you do writing and stuff, and it's really important to you. So why is politics so important to you at this stage of your life?
Politics were always very important to me. I was always interested in politics. I don't know if it's something that is, you know, some people say, oh, well, you know, why to worry about politics? Why to read politics if we cannot influence them? Well, no, of course we can. I mean, we can vote. And we cannot vote have a cost intelligent vote if we do not read and we don't know anything about the politics.
So if we close ourselves off, how do we know? I mean, that's the thing is...
Exactly. Most people that do not vote, they don't really, they are not interested in politics, they don't read politics. And this is like this, you know, this notion as, I can't change anything. It's pretty ridiculous. So, yeah, exactly. So, but I actually was always interested and, you know, I graduated from law university, always wanted to, in fact, go to, you know, study journalism, but, you know, all this never happened. You know, I couldn't use my education because I, you know, left. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I think politics are fascinating. I read and, you know, I read everything from New York Times to Breitbart and Drudge because I think it's important to know both sides. I'm always curious. I was always curious about in both sides, even taking it all the way to Breitbart, which is, you know, quite a horrible publication, of course. It was conservative one when Breitbart was actually alive, and then when it was taken over by Steve Bannon, then it became a joke and dangerous. I'm sorry, it's not a joke. It became a very dangerous power.
Yeah.
I take it back.
Very dangerous power, because then that's what fuels the fire, fuels the divides, and starts to fuel the misrepresentations and everything else. So in your work, I'm curious how you feel like your work can actually have a big impact in the world right now, whether it be just continuing to do the beautiful work you do and saying, this is something that's important, or whether your activism, what's the most important thing you feel like you could do right now to have impact?
Well, look, when it comes to my daytime job, pornography and producing porn movies, I think it's a good thing for many reasons, but I'll talk about one because of time, you know, and that's how it helped me. When I was growing up in Soviet Union, we didn't know anything about sexuality at all, straight or gay, we knew very little. In the same time, you have this propaganda of straight lifestyle, you know, just like here, every movie, and back then we didn't have any gay characters like now, you know, and would be a clown or criminal. But if it's a clown, it will be a very feminine, nothing wrong with that, but when it's only a very feminine, you know, character or evil character, that's, you know, that you can't relate to, then this is becoming incredibly difficult. And I could only see, and that's when I watched the porn movie first time, I thought, oh my God, these guys, I can relate to them. I mean, I see two really good looking masculine men that having sex and they enjoying it and they are not apologizing for that. And for me, it was very important. Now, in America, it's really not that important these days because, look, you can, you know, I mean, because nearly every sitcom, every show, you know, has a gay character that is a very positive gay character. Otherwise, you know, GLAD will send you to rehab.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, but we have, you know, Western civilization is very small and, you know, they're not much smaller than the very dark part of the world, which is, you know, from Russia and parts of Asia to Africa and all the Muslim Middle East and every Muslim country like Indonesia. It's all about oppression. It's all about hate towards minorities, whether sexual or religious minorities. And that's when it is important. I mean, look, when I go anywhere, and I like to go to strange places, I go to, you know, to everywhere from North Africa and Middle East and to Asia. And I mean, I love traveling. It's my another passion. And people know me because of the internet. Gay people come to me, they talk to me, and I hear exactly that, you know, it gives gay men a lot of power, not to enjoy sex, actually, and not to feel shame about themselves, not to feel like they are some weirdos, some sick people that society is telling them that they are. And that's what, because they see gay men having, you know, this great sex without fear and enjoying it. So I think that's one of the very important, points.
I agree 100%. I think it's one of the things that I know for me when I was younger, and I came out when I was 19 and then I went back in the closet because of, you know, some uneducation and fear and oppression from family and stuff. but it was the gay porn and stuff that made me realize it's okay. I am okay. You know, yes, it helped me get off and enjoy my life too. But through those years that I was married to a woman and figuring all this out, it was those were the moments that I'm like, okay, I know I can't, there's just something wrong, but I can't be this weirdo. There's no way. And it became kind of my lifeline. And, you know, it's so interesting as you were listing off the different countries where you say, you know, it's filled with hatred and stuff. The ironic thing is this podcast, those are the countries that we get a lot of downloads from.
And that is fantastic because, yes, is, you know, people here in the West, we do not really appreciate the democracy that we have and our liberal democratic institutions. We don't really know, you know, we don't think about it. And look, now a lot of people are saying, oh, well, you know, this is not democracy. I mean, stupid things like that. No, immigrants, we do know that us who come from, you know, from countries like Soviet Union, you know, we do know that this is democracy and this is the way, the only, not the, it's not the perfect system, but that's the only system, in my opinion, which the only society which is worth living in. And yes, majority of the world overwhelmingly is backwards, is dark, is cruel, and has no, does not live by laws. It's either run by tyrants and dictators or by kings in monarchies like Saudi Arabia and all this medieval feud in the Middle East, except for Israel. And that's what I see all over, you know, the world I'm traveling to, unless I'm going to, you know, to Western Europe, France, Italy, you know, and you know, Canada, Australia. But it's a very small world. And, you know, we should protect it as fiercely as others protecting their world. Look how Muslims protect their world. Look how Russians protecting their world. And how they're fighting us by installing a president who is working for them, by interfering our, you know, our election system, by telling its own people and that democracy is an awful thing, by showing, you know, them how our people are, you know, are divided. Look, we're divided, of course, but we all believe, and I hope, in laws, right? And this is very different, but it's used against us. But, you know, others are fighting us. The world that is not the Western world is fighting us vigorously, and we should defend our world vigorously as well.
I agree. And I think one of the things that people often miss about how the porn industry fits into things, and especially in the gay and lesbian porn, especially gay porn, is it's part of the movement. It's part of saying we are normal. If we don't continue to show the normalcy, whether the normalcy is gay marriage or adopting and having children or letting gay porn be a part of our life and part of our culture, you know, I kind of get frustrated at times, you know, when people talk about our pride parades and stuff, and, you know, it's always sexualized, and I can see that point of view, but there's also a piece of this that says, if we keep hiding this sexualized piece of who we are, then the other side kind of wins. This is where, what they're trying to get us to do is to keep prowling under and hiding who we are. And that's it's just not
That's a different, that's even a difference here. It's another topic, which is, you know, because, you know, with we're arriving into gay marriage, we have gay marriage, we're gay men, a lot of them are trying to, and I mean, gay people are trying to copy straight lifestyle very much. And I don't know, if it, I don't think it's good. I think there is something about uniqueness, you know, of our people, and we are not like everyone. Yet a lot of people want to be like everyone else. I mean, it's fine, you know, it's fine. And I think it's beautiful that gay people have families. I think it's a wonderful thing, but it's not for everyone. But again, it's very difficult to stand against. You know, I think that with the propaganda that you see everywhere, I mean, look, from Facebook and social media to, you know, movies, that, you know, gay marriage, everybody is getting married. You see everywhere on Facebook, you know, engaged, married. A lot of people, that's a problem, you know, that I see. You know, a lot of people actually don't want a boyfriend or get, they don't want to get married, but they feel the pressure of the society and they get, you know, engaged and they get married, or they just get the boyfriend. And, you know, I do believe that not everyone needs that. I don't believe everyone wants that. I believe that in order to have been in relationships, had five major relationships, One of them was 13 years. It's first time now that I'm single for 2 years. It's incredibly easy, I believe, and I know, to get a partner. Mm-hmm. Very easy to get a partner. People, you know, I mean, in New York City, come on. But I mean, depends on how low you're.
Right,
you're,
exactly. I love what you're sharing here, Michael, because this is so important that we, first of all, realize it's not for everyone. I mean, when marriage first got, you know, put through, especially the first time in California and then the second time, you know, everybody was looking at my husband and I going, well, when are you guys going to do this? And we're like, well, we don't know. We're not like rushing to the chapel. And we had been together at that time by 12 years, 11 years, something like
that.
You know,
yeah,
it wasn't that we didn't love each other.
People,
it wasn't what was fitting for us at that time. And then, you know, now we're going on 3 years of being married. But I get really frustrated at times with our community whenever it's either one extreme or the other. It's either why aren't you?
Well, you know, it's a,
or why are
it's
you?
It's a straight institution of marriage is dying. In Europe, mm-hmm. people are getting married less and less and less.
Yep.
When they have kids, they do and gives a certain rights. But you know, again, this is not just about getting married about marriage. It's just in general. I think just relationships. I think a lot of, if you want to be in a relationship, you should have a really belief that this is the most important thing for you.
Yep.
The number one thing, because the relationships are so complicated and requires so much work that, you know, it's not just this romantic 3-6 months, you know, romantic period.
Yep. You got
to
be ready.
That just comes away.
Yep. You got to be ready to dive in and be in it and be in the good, the bad, the ugly, all that stuff.
And it brings a lot of, you know, it comes with a lot of commitments, a lot of commitments. And I tell you, you know, a lot of people, maybe half, I don't know, but do not really, would not have those relationships, would not be in relationships, if not for the pressure from the society. And that's bad because that people, a lot of people are very unhappy. Mm-hmm. They're unhappy, more unhappy and more lonely in their marriages or really in their relationships rather than, you know, and they will be much happier to be alone. I mean, it's really easy if you think about it to find a partner. Mm-hmm. It is about what's difficult is to find a partner that is the right partner, and people, because of that whole, you know, madness about getting married, getting a boyfriend. Do you have a boyfriend? When you will have a boyfriend? I think a lot of people just go for, you know, sometimes bars are very low. It's another thing. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. It's easy to get into a relationship and then be miserable. And it's not for everyone in general. You have to have a really serious idea and dedication that this is something you really want.
You know that
for sure, and it's for sure, then it's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's
you need to be very clear why you want the relationship. And I think so many people don't do that. You know, they're not.
Well, because this is incredibly important for you, because you believe that you want to share your life with another person. Mm-hmm. And you want to be with him through all the good and bad.
Yeah, exactly.
And not because sometimes, you know, you're bored and sometimes it's nice to go to see a movie together. And wouldn't it be nice to cuddle on the couch and watch Netflix? I mean, those reasons, you know, that lead to this bad relationships that poison, you know, everything around, and that, you know, really unhappy. That's what I think.
Yeah.
And believe me, I'm not saying that people shouldn't be in relationships. They should just be there for all the right reasons.
Exactly.
And really think, do they want commitments, extra commitments? You know, I was in relationships, five major relationships plus one with a girl back in Russia. I was never on my own. Mm-hmm. And that's just so wrong. You know, I am and really enjoying my life now. And I start questioning, maybe this is something I did because I wanted to prove something. Maybe it was because I wanted to prove that I am, you know, working in porn, and yet look, I can get a really, you know, successful, you know, person like, you know, one of my boyfriends who's fantastic, doctor of philosophy, you know, and, you know, another one would be, you know, senior executive of, you know, a very respected company. People that will be very well educated. And I'm thinking sometimes, well, why I had all those requirements? Yeah. Some of them were very right and very good. I was, you know, I learned a lot. But sometimes I think, hey, maybe the reasons were wrong reasons. Maybe I just wanted to prove to society that, well, look, I'm important, but here, look what I can do. But in the end, listen, who gives a shit?
Right.
Who cares? Who cares?
Exactly.
And then I realized that nobody cares. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'm so happy in the last 2 years. It might change. You never know.
Yeah.
But, you know, right now, I just don't want it to change. I want it to be this way.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So really quickly here, before we wrap up, I know there's something else that's really important to you in your life, and that's your family. I think that's really important for people to kind of hear that. In fact, there's one person in your life you try to see almost every day, right?
Well, I try to see my family. My family, you know, it was a bigger family. You know, I brought my grandparents first to America when I legalized, and then my parents, and then my brother, and then my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just happened so that, you know, we were together all for 6 years, with six great years. And, you know, my grandfather passed away. He had cancer. My mother passed away a year later. She had cancer and was very young. She was 58 years old. And my father and my brother, they decided to leave. My brother left first to back to Russia. He got an amazing job. And then my father decided he wants grandkids and he wants to be next to my brother. So then my grandmother remained in New York. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, 3 days ago, she had a stroke, another stroke, and she's in the hospital. And I'm between, you know, office and hospital. And it's incredibly sad to see her in that state when she, you know, have a tube and she can swallow, you know, food. And she's 97. And she had a great life. But, and, you know, she's the last person, last family member that I have in America. I hope my brother will come back, you know, and with my niece, who I'm very close with. All right now, it's really sad that, you know, I talked to my grandmother every day while she, you know, since I was a kid. And that's why, you know, she came to America. It was, you know, kind of, you know, at the age of 80, my grandparents moved here. They really loved me. They wanted to be with me. It's very,
awesome.
Very difficult. Something what a lot of people don't understand is that suddenly there is no one. And that's what I understood so clearly, that now that she couldn't speak well for a long, like for nearly a year, worse and worse, because there were two other strokes. Suddenly, there's nobody who can ask you, how are you? And, you know, are you dressed warm? Did you eat? Those things that really can get on your nerves when your parents or your grandparents can ask you 1,000 times, are you dressed warm? It's raining. Right. Mm-hmm. Did you get wet? You know, did you sleep? How did you sleep? And, you know, but then suddenly, you know, and it's natural. It's very natural.
Right.
But then in 1 second, I think everyone should remember, will be a day when there will be no one asking you this question.
Absolutely.
No one will be asking this question. And that is, you know, I mean, I afford to tell people that have their, you know, their parents and grandparents, I mean, you know, enjoy it. Natural, it will sometimes get on your nerves, but enjoy it while it's last and look at it from that perspective, that this is something incredible, that someone cares about you so much. And sometimes to the point when it's annoying, but careful, because one day you might regret that you, you know, that you didn't have patience for that. It's
awesome.
My family was very supportive when I came out. They were very supportive, and it's very rare for people that lived all those lives in Soviet Union. I mean, it's good. They were very well educated. They were Russian intelligentsia. My grandmother was a teacher of piano. My mother, doctor of philosophy, and my grandparents were grandfather and my father engineers. So it helped. It helped. But I always appreciated that I didn't go through all those horror stories that you hear in Russia and in America too, where, you know, children were kicked out of, you know, kids were kicked out of their, you know, homes. And you know, I was very always appreciative. So it's not just that, you know, I brought them here just because they're my family. They are, they were an amazing family. And I am very close with my brother and with my father, who was the most complicated person in the family. And I had my moments with him when I was hurt by him. I mean, not physically, no, never. But, you know, overall, it was a great family. And I'm very close with my brother. I travel with him, with my niece, with his wife, We travel together a lot. And whenever I have a boyfriend, I have a boyfriend and traveling. But yeah, family is very important for me. And I'm lucky with them.
That's awesome. I'm so glad you shared that.
I do not, by the way, believe that everyone should, take their parents the way they are and forget everything bad and just suffer through. I actually don't believe that because you have the same genetics, the same DNA. I don't believe that one, should be close with someone who is poisonous to their lives. But when they are good, you better appreciate it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, you know what, Michael, I just want to say I'm so glad that you spent time with us here today.
Thank you.
And shared so much of your insights and wisdom. The last thing I'd like to ask you is if you could leave a bit of wisdom for somebody who may be listening to this and just, struggling with their own coming out journey or finding themselves, what would be the last piece of wisdom you'd love to leave the listeners with?
Well, I would say even when you think that you don't have to come out to your family or to your friends, even when might be so. You might still have those friends and you might be, close enough with your family, but it is very bad, I think, for your psyche. Mm-hmm. I think it's very damaging because when you live in lie all the time, that is becoming very damaging. A lot of gay men tell me that live in Russia, ask them, well, why don't you move? There is only one way from Russia is the airport.
Right.
For gay people, why don't you move out? Very often they say, it's actually not bad. I don't have to walk around the street with my boyfriend. I have my friends and they know, and I have, no. It is very bad for you psychologically when you are lying, whether it is to society, because you cannot take your boyfriend proudly like everyone else, like all the straight people, and walk with him hand to hand because you are proud that he's right next to you. And if you cannot share it with your friends or with people you work with, mm-hmm. if of course with your family, that is incredibly damaging, and that at the end it will backfire and will require probably a lot of work with a shrink if one is smart enough to seek help of a shrink. Yeah. But this is not just, I don't have to talk about my sexuality at work in my office because I don't have to wear my sexuality on the sleeve. No, this is very bad. This is a very wrong way of thinking about it. Because when you are, let's say, working in your office and everyone is talking about their, boyfriends or their girlfriends or their husbands or their wives, it is terrible when you are not talking, usually lying, by saying, I didn't meet anyone. This is terrible. It's something what is with you every moment, every step of your life, which is, being in the closet, meaning lying, lying to everybody. And that is incredibly damaging.
Yeah, it's definitely a form of personal abuse, and I don't think people realize that. And every one of us deserves happiness. And most of the time, when you can finally step into that space and just say, "This is what I am, and this is what I deserve to be," and
absolutely,
there's not going to be pain. There's going to be some pain in some places. Other times, there's not. But I love that piece of advice.
Well, look, it's case by case. Yes, if you have your 80 years old mother with a bad heart,
right?
Well, maybe it's okay not to come to her and say, "Mom, I'm gay." It's fine not to do it. But in usual circumstances, I ask my friends, so what do you think the reaction will be? Your 60 years old mother, what's going to happen? She's going to what?
Right.
She's going to cry. And then what? She's going to be sad. Okay. And then what?
Right.
These two shall pass.
Yes,
this
absolutely.
Will, at some point, it will be fine. Yeah. And or not, but usually it will be fine. And,
or it will
and
be
in whatever it is, it will be better than you closing.
Absolutely.
I read some, I think I read, it was Marcel Proust wrote in this, it was called a novel called Sodom and Gomorrah, I think. And he was writing this pretty, something what really shook me, that was that homosexuals, he wrote, that was like in 19th century. So homosexuals lie to everyone. They even lie to their mothers when they're closing their eyes. Hmm. That was back in the days, but how awful.
Right? Absolutely.
You don't want to lie to people you love.
Absolutely. Beautiful stuff.
They don't know who you are.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Michael. I so appreciate you and love what you do. And thank you for continuing to be just a beautiful beautiful advocate in life and doing the work that you do to keep the planet spinning in a really beautiful way and keeping all of us entertained with just beautiful film stuff. So again, appreciate you being here today, man.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate that. Thanks so much.
So that's what we call in the podcast world a wrap, the end, finito, whatever you want to call it. That's the end of another episode of the Coming Out Lounge. I'm Rick Clemens, the Coming Out Coach, that guy that hopefully is helping you simplify your life so you can make some big, bold moves. And if you've been wanting to do just that, might I suggest that you hop over to the comingoutlounge.com website. On the homepage or on the episode pages, you're going to see a little icon that says schedule a discovery session. And I would love to have a chat with you. If you're kind of in that space of trying to figure out what's next, how you're going to do this, let's have a chat, you and me. We'll sit down for 30 minutes. We'll do it over the phone, via Zoom, via Skype, whatever works. And we'll have a chat about where you are in your journey. It's totally free, no obligation, but I'd love to just help you in any way that I can. It's kind of my give back to my listeners of the Coming Out Lounge. And as usual, I just want to say I love you. I appreciate you. I'm so glad that you're subscribers. And keep sharing this podcast. The more we share this, the better the world will be and the less homophobia and bigotry that will exist out there in the world with each step that we make. Finally, never, ever forget that if you want to give us a suggestion for a show or a guest or have a comment or have a question, call us at 949-371-8559. Again, 949-371-8559, and we'll listen to what you got to say. And with that, we're going to wrap it up. Have a great week, everyone. Take care.